everybody, and welcome back to this episode of Christmas Clatter. We are into weekly episodes now of the podcast and on YouTube. And, you know, I was looking at my calendar and it's just filling up so fast. It's like, we only have like 10 or 11 weekends till Christmas. One of those weekends involves Thanksgiving here in the States. So that weekend's taken up. And like I always say, it's a marathon to Christmas, but once those burr months hit, it turns into a full-blown sprint. So I hope you guys are all taking advantage. I hope that everybody's weather is starting to turn a little cooler. I know those in the South, it's still too hot for my comfort. Last Wednesday, it was 100 degrees here. And then the very next day, the high was 76, and it like dipped down into the 40s at night. So it was like instantly fall was here. So it's hopefully you guys are getting some relief from the heat. For those in Florida and that part of the country with the hurricane, you guys just stay safe. And our thoughts and prayers are for you guys. And hopefully that, this will pass and with minimal damage and all that, but we're with you, and hopefully you can get a little bit of relief from having your mind on that. So just a couple of housekeeping things. I want to remind everybody our Christmas puzzle exchange will be coming very, very soon. And so keep your eye out on that. Hopefully I'll be able to start blogs back up on the website. That's something that may have to be pushed off a little longer, and I'm going to try to get the newsletters going again, but the more I think about it and the time frame, that may be more of a 2023 thing, because if it's like I haven't sent a newsletter in a while, and if you don't, then a lot of times they'll just go like straight to spam, and I don't really want that to happen, so I'll need to figure that out. But it is something I'm thinking about for those that really enjoy reading that I just want to remind everybody we do still have our TeePublic store. If anybody wants a Christmas t-shirt, we have Christmas Clatter t-shirts and all kinds of different various Christmas t-shirts. And you just go to ChristmasClatter.com, and there'll be a t-shirt merch page on that website, and you can click there and it'll take you straight to the store if you're interested. And also ChristmasClatter.live/planner, and that'll take you straight to our Christmas planner, which is getting rave reviews on Amazon. I appreciate everybody that's been on Amazon to review it. If you have it and you like it, please leave a review on Amazon. ChristmasClatter.live/planner. It's like $8.99, $9 for it to help plan for your Christmas, to kind of take the stress out of the holidays. And like I said last week, if you guys are tired of me talking about the planner, I just asked for a little leeway the rest of October, because I'm really going to hit it hard. It's just one of those things, you know, I made it, I want people to have it and use it and enjoy it, because it's fun. It's fun to write stuff down and scratch them out. You know, it's like making a game out of planning for Christmas. But, well, guys, this is a very special year. Here a few years back, we had the 200th anniversary of the song Silent Night. That was that 2018, I believe? Best I can remember off the top of my head, 2018. And, you know, but this year we have another 200th anniversary of a Christmas classic. And it's the poem that's became known as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. We all know it. I don't know if we all could recite it all by heart, but we can get through most of it or big chunks of it, which is very cool. So this year, this Christmas will be the bicentennial, and we have a special guest on, and she wrote, a book celebrating that bicentennial and the history. And it's a fabulous book. It was actually more than I expected, you know, in the book, which was a great surprise. It's a beautiful book. So without any further ado, here is my Christmas conversation with Pamela McCall. Hey, Pamela, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. Thanks for joining me here on Christmas Clatter. It is just an honor to have you. And before we get started, I'm not just saying that because you're on Christmas Clatter, but this book was blew me. I don't know what I expected, but it met those and exceeded those tremendously. I was like, holy cow. You know, this is a lot of meat on the bone, if you will, you know, with this book. And before we get into the book too much, I always ask people that write Christmas, you know, write about Christmas things or make Christmas albums, you know, and stuff. People just don't, you know, set out to do it one day. You know, it's just not like one day you just have an idea. There's got to be like some deep love for Christmas in there somewhere to do it. So just kind of start us there. Have you always been just a kind of a Christmas nut, Christmas fan? What kind of led you to do such a book?
Well, I was given the poem when I was about 4 years old, and I still have the edition. And it's actually the only thing I have from my father. So oh, wow. It means a lot to me.
Yeah.
And I grew up with a lot of children's literature. I was just really blessed to have an older aunt who loved Christmas books. And she'd take us on a field trip. And we'd go to a bookstore and choose our Christmas book. Uh-huh. And then she'd take them home and she'd wrap them and she'd bring them on Christmas night in her basket. It was a big deal. And so Christmas books have always been a big part of my life. And I actually have a Christmas basket under my tree full of Christmas books. Uh-huh. So if a child comes over, they can, you know, go and look at my books and sit under the tree and read one. So there's so much great Christmas literature, right? There's just so many phenomenally great, you know, magical sort of, you know, dreamy books. So I think that's really where it came from. It's just my love of children's literature and Christmas, of course.
Yeah. There are, you know, I found myself kind of, without thinking about it, collecting like children's books that are Christmas themed, you know, just here and there. And then my wife has started collecting the Golden Rule books, especially the Christmas ones, you know, and so there is something special about a children's Christmas book that just kind of can capture that imagination. So that's a fantastic story about that poem being from your father. It's just, is really
the only thing I have of his.
Yeah. That's really,
I think it's a 1956 edition. I'm 64. So I think it's a 1956 edition and they're collectible now. They're worth about $185, but I wouldn't sell that.
So, oh no.
I'm sure he bought it for 25 cents. It's like a soft cover, like 4 or 5 page thing with some flossing on the front.
Yeah.
And, but you know, the sentimental value to me is priceless, but I just, you know, there's so much great Christmas literature and yet 'Twas the Night Before Christmas stands apart. I mean, it is the most famous poem ever written in the English language.
Yeah.
The most recited, right? The most collected, you know?
Well, it's been 200 years and there's countless copies and countless variations, you know, of it.
There's 2,000 books, they say, about.
She counted them for us, though.
But it's about 2,000 editions.
But before we get into the book, you can see that the red book behind her with the Santa Claus doesn't do it justice. This is a big, let me see if I can get it. This is a big book, guys. Yeah. It is a thick book and it is not just pictures. It is, I got to get my camera right. It is just filled. And now there's wonderful, wonderful images in here. If you guys are not able to see this on YouTube and just listening on the podcast, I apologize, but please check it out because it is astonishing how monstrous this book is and how beautifully done it is. And before we get too much further, right in the middle of the book, there's like a print of the poem and the handwriting.
This is the original.
Yeah. This just blew took my breath away. It was just like, I looked at it and just kind of in awe. It's like I had the original in my hand, even though it was a copy, you know, and, it was fantastic. So 200 years ago. Can you give us a brief origin of this poem? Was it just something that just popped out of the blue? Because, spoiler alert, this book does not start 200 years ago. This book goes back many more years.
Third century.
Yeah, goes back many more. The Roman Empire. Many more years before that is where this book, it gives you all the context you need for the poem and kind of the springboard, you know, that led to the poem. So if you could just kind of give us the bird's eye view, you know, say it's, 1821 or something like that.
Well, I mean, the urban legend has Clemency Moore driving home on a sleigh on Christmas Eve from Greenwich Village to his home in Chelsea called Chelsea House, and that he hears sleigh bells and he just whips off this great poem in time to get home for dinner and read it to his children. That's sort of the urban legend. Uh-huh. My take on the poem is that it was written over centuries because it draws from St. Nicholas of the third century with the Roman Empire and then follows its way through. So even though it's written in New York in 1822, it was centuries in the making. And my book really is the story of the American Christmas experience going from the Mayflower, the book covers the Mayflower because of Harriet Beecher Stowe, but it follows through the American Revolution and the American Civil War, because Clemency Moore is born at the end of the American Revolution and dies at the end of the American Civil War. So that's why when I started to write this book, that's why I had to do this deep dive, because this is pretty significant history we're talking about and pretty significant people. So.
Yeah, it is. And I like how you gave the context of how the poem was built on others. And there's all kinds of different poems and songs that you reference, and you have full versions of in here that you're like, where you can see where it's building. You know, it's just not like a complete idea just poofed, out of his head. It was something that was built upon. And then to have this poem go and to be something that is taken and built upon even further, because our ideas of St. Nick / Santa Claus, even though they're not the same as he describes in this poem, it's kind of the basis of where that took off for modern times. So it's kind of like he took all that stuff and fast forwarded a little bit, for everybody. And
all the great illustrators, right, who came to it from 1862 with F.O.C. Darley, who, Theodore Roosevelt read the F.O.C. Darley edition of Twas the Night when he was 4.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's how far back we have to go. Yeah. And they each changed it, right? All these different artists came along.
Yeah. That was the first illustrated version? Was that?
Fully. Yes, it was the first fully illustrated. Yeah. There were some earlier wood carvings and engravings, but the first sort of significant one, I would say, yes.
Yeah. That's cool too, is because you have a lot of those pictures in there of all those early illustrations, and they were just wild. Yeah. It's just crazy. It's nothing like you would see today. And some of them, maybe even a little haunting, at times. And, this poem was originally published in a paper, was there any money made on it originally, or was it just something that was kind of freely given?
No, it was published in the Troy Sentinel in Troy, New York on December 23rd of 1823. So there's actually two bicentennials. So we're celebrating, we're celebrating the bicentennial this Christmas Eve, but we should be celebrating the full year of 2023 up until next Christmas, because there's two bicentennials, right?
Yeah.
And it was published anonymously, and nobody was ever paid.
Yeah. Wow.
No.
That wouldn't happen nowadays.
No, thanks to people like Mark Twain who put a copyright in place, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That is something else. But so it was published anonymously at first. Was it the next year that he took credit for it?
No, it wasn't for 15 years, but it was published in other papers. It was in other magazines and newspapers right away and almanacs, and it was very popular. But Clemency Moore doesn't lay claim to it until 1837.
Oh,
and he puts it in his own collected works of poetry in 1844. Oh, but wow. The first thing we have actually is a document where somebody else, some editor, gave the credit to somebody else. And Clement C. Moore, you see him writing to the editor saying, "No, no, 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 this is mine. Sorry." Right. But he was a scholar. He was a professor at the General Theological Seminary in Chelsea, New York. He was an academic. He was very wealthy. He was very extremely well educated. He brought opera to New York. And I don't think he really wanted to be associated with this poem. He wanted to be known for his, you know, his lexicon and all kinds of other things he'd done.
Right.
You know, so.
Right. He just thought it was, I guess at first, just kind of a, I don't want to say silly. That seems a little bit dismissive, but, you know, just kind of something that he wrote with that didn't have as much, you know, weight to it. And what do you think about this poem that really captured the imagination of, you know, America?
I think it's the magical flow of the language and the rhythm, but I also think it's extremely creative, right? I mean, it's a wonderful, and it's Mickey Mouse and hope. I mean, it's the same American spirit of, you know, it really is the Sorcerer's Apprentice. It's hope. It's magic and hope. But I think the most important part about the poem is the fact that there's no naughty and nice. So there's no judgment, right? There's no, no birch and rod. There's no creepy elves hiding out, waiting to, you know, dish out punishment or, you know, lumps of black coal or beat anybody up, right? Yeah. It's just kind, benevolent Christian. There's no judgment, none. And I think that's why it's been so popular.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I think so. I think some of it is, it's like, this is going to sound really silly, but it's like the perfect length. It's not too short and it's not too long. And it's very memorizable. It's like, as soon as you hear a few of the lines, they're just stuck with you, you know?
Yes.
And, you know, and things like, you know, having visions of sugar plums that danced in the head, and people really aren't 100% sure what the sugar plums are to this day. They have ideas of what they could be, but it's kind of one of those things that are, you know, was it lost to history or was it, you know, just something, you know, that was just kind of just fit, you know, the rhythm of the poem, and he put it in there, you know. So
yeah, I think candies were part of New Year's Eve back then. Christmas trees certainly weren't, but candy was a big thing, and I think children were given trinkets and candies, specifically in New York around New Year's Eve, and then Christmas Day it would be more of a dinner and religious activities. But I think the candy, the sugar plums, the candies, confections would have been part of it, and I think that we don't eat them anymore, but I mean, you can find recipes for sugar plums.
Yeah.
They're a confection.
Yeah, definitely. Now, 21 years after, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, a guy across the pond writes a book called A Christmas Carol.
Right.
Now, something tells me that it might be impossible for him not to be inspired by this poem in some way or another. I can't say that for sure. And I don't know if you touch on it in the book. I wasn't able to get through the whole book before we talked here tonight, but do you have any thoughts or feelings on that? If the poem maybe had more reach than just here in the States, North America?
Well, I was in New York last week and I was at Sunnyside, Washington Irving's home up in Tarrytown, and Washington Irving had St. Nicholas flying across homes by wagon across the sky. So Washington Irving is earlier, right, with the Knickerbocker. Right. He introduces this idea into America and into Christmas culture. Dickens loved Washington Irving. Uh-huh. He said he mused with him more than any other human being on the planet. Mm-hmm. And he wore copies of his books out in his pockets. He referred to them so often. And if you look at Washington Irving's Christmas stories and Dickens, there's parallels, almost in the language, the imagery, everything about it. But what you're saying, the concept of Christmas Carol being a ghost story, Twas the Night Before Christmas is a ghost story. It's a spirit story. There's a magical creature arrives at night, right?
Yeah.
And it's a ghost story. And so Charles Dickens, Ebenezer Scrooge, right? Washington Irving's brother's name was Ebenezer. You know, they were really, really close. Dickens loved Washington Irving. And I, after studying this book and reading everything I could about Washington Irving, you probably noticed in the book, I've got a whole chapter called The American Saint.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a pun, but it's Washington Irving. It's not, I'm not talking about St. Nicholas. Right. Washington Irving, to read Washington Irving and what he did and how he helped literature in America, but also just this Christmas, the Christmas dinner and the whole holiday. I love Washington Irving. You know, it's just, he was a wonderful writer and I think people should read him for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And that was a name, being a Christmas guy, that was a name that was like, I kind of knew a few things, but you know, it just, he just kind of gets drowned out by, you know, like Dickens and others, and reading through that part of the book and kind of going over, it's like, all right, I'm gonna have to take my time and go back, because there's a lot of Christmas that, that Irving has, you know, that he doesn't get credit for, that I really feel like I have to flush out, you know. And that's really the main takeaway I've had. You know, like I said, I haven't been able to get through the book, you know, deep, because I read through parts of it and I want to go back and, you know, it's like really carefully read. But that was like my first takeaway, was like, I have to go back and look at Washington Irving a little closer.
You know, that's exactly what I did. That's exactly what happened to me. 10 years I worked on this book, because that's exactly what happened to me. I'd go along and then I'd go, Harry Beecher Stowe, right? And then you'd have to stop and read everything about her and then go down all these paths. And then you'd bump into somebody else, or you'd bump into genealogy and you'd connect these people, you know, like Washington Irving, you know, you can connect him with Dickens, but there's so many other, like he introduced the history of New York, the Knickerbocker's History of New York, right? His great novel that made him famous and is so famous.
Right.
At the St. Nicholas dinner.
Right.
On St. Nicholas Day.
Right.
You know, it wasn't random. He was into St. Nicholas, you know?
Right.
So, you know, and then he had to go research all of that, of course. So, you know, it was, I mean, I spent 10 years working on this because there were so many things I had to go research, and I wrote the book specifically and designed it and published it the way I did, because I want people to sort of, to be like you just said, it's exactly what I did. I tried to sort of excite people about maybe going and looking at Mark Twain and Christmas, or going at Beecher Stowe, or going to Washington Irving or Dickens or Longfellow, right? All these great people who built American culture. Or Andy Warhol is in the book because of his Myth series. What did he, why was he doing Santa Claus? What is he trying to say about Santa Claus?
Right.
Norman Rockwell's really interesting with Santa Claus and Twas a Night. Norman Rockwell, the very, very famous American artist, painted a painting called Twas the Night Before Christmas. It just sold for $500,000. And it just, it's Santa Claus discovering some children, but so much of Norman Rockwell's world was the reveal, right?
Yeah.
Really interesting how these major artists came to this poem and then made it something else. And it's really interesting for me to see how the naughty and nice creep back into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it did.
Yeah, it did.
It
definitely did. And I just got to ask this. You said 10 years to write the book. Did you have the 200th anniversary in mind for its release, or was that just a happy coincidence?
No. I published the book behind me, Twas the Night Before Christmas, the edition, in 2012. And it was at that point, right, that I realized, oh, it's having its bicentennial in 10 years, so let's get going on that project. And and then I did, and I because I afforded myself 10 years, right? I found, like, there was a man who has a collection of the poem in Oklahoma, and so I went to Oklahoma in the middle of a tornado, and I went to this oil company where he holds the collection in a vault, right? There's tornadoes, like warnings going off on his watch and his TV and everything. I stayed with he and his wife, and, you know, we spent 4 days looking at his collection. That's what I did.
Oh, wow.
You know? So, and then I afforded myself going to Troy, and like this, I wanted to show you this.
Oh, yeah?
Is actually the Troy newspaper. I have it like screen, but you know, I got this from the library. This is actually the newspaper, how it first appeared.
Oh, wow. Like,
you know, and I participated in a theatrical production about who really wrote the poem in Troy. Like, I've really immersed myself in it. It's been enormous fun to do that. And even the genealogy has been really, really fun. Like, I'm speaking at the Mayflower Society in Plymouth on Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
And I made a connection between the poem and the Mayflower. And I sent a little memo out to the librarian saying, I'm going to be coming to Plymouth. I'd love to speak. And I found a connection. Well, she sent me an email back and she copied everybody in the Mayflower Society, including the president. And they all went, we're so excited to find out what you've discovered, right, in your research. Yeah. And it was like a, you know, it's a genealogy link. But hey, it's a genealogy link.
Yeah, that's a link.
Got it, fun, right?
I'm going to say this on behalf of all the Christmas loving community. Thank you for that 10 years, because I have a lot of books that come through the podcast. You know, there's some of them are fictional novels, and there's been some great children's books, and there's been some of those, I call them coffee table books. And those are a lot of fun, but you like pick them up and they're real colorful, and open it to a random page and there's like five different, like two paragraph facts about Christmas that maybe you didn't know or didn't know. And they're just a lot of fun and they, you know, bring back a lot of memories, you know, and that kind of thing. But this may be the first Christmas textbook I ever had on Christmas Letter.
My PhD in Christmas, right?
Yeah. I'm being serious, for anybody that says you love Christmas, and I don't mean textbook like dry and boring. I mean, like, this is because you go back to the third century and then work your way forward. So it is a textbook. It's well written with so much illustrations. It's like, it's, you know, something, you know, to sink your teeth into, because I was so disappointed. I really love Christmas music and I was wanting to get in, you know, to some kind of the history of some of the Christmas songs. And I found a book and I thought, oh, this book, this guy did all this stuff. So I start reading reviews before I bought the book. And one review after another was like, this is a pretty good book, but this was all like folklore and none of this is really proven. So he basically just took all the high end, you know, highbrow stories about how stuff was written and just threw it together without any like histories and facts and stuff. And you took that deep dive into the libraries and into the collections to find them. And that's not an easy task, and you know, especially over a 10-year journey. So thank you for that, because it produced something that people like me that love Christmas can really sink into. And if you're just a Christmas person around the holidays, this is even a great book to have just for the history, because it covers so much history in American history and in European history. And it just blew me away when I got it. It was just,
Thank you. It's
such beautifully bound, and the pictures were so, I'm not just saying that because you're on the podcast. Really, I'm not. I've seen a lot of books come through and a lot of books I've said, nah, we're not going to be talking about that, you know, this time around, just all fold up, the schedule's all fold up all of a sudden, you know, kind of thing. But this blew me away. And guys, I can't encourage you enough. There's a link in the description, show notes, for you guys. Take you straight to Amazon. It is an affiliate link, but, you know, it's no extra cost to you, to use it. And, Pamela, before I let you off here, what's one thing about the poem itself, Twas Night Before Christmas, that you learned that surprised you?
Oh, good question. Well, I was doing some research and I discovered that some people thought that Clement Seymour owned slaves, and they kind of, and I've seen some, if you look at the readership of Twas, it's actually gone down, and that's kind of depressing because I think that it's a really great poem. Mm-hmm. So last Christmas Eve, I was shutting down my computers because I have children and a granddaughter, and I was going to do my thing. And I got an email, like an alert, right? One of the things I alert for. And it was an article by a New York journalist. And I went, what's this? You know? And so I opened it up, and he had spent 3 months of his life in deep research on that very question. And mm-hmm. he proved he never had slaves.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And I had to print off 64 pages of a document on Christmas Eve. And I pulled it off because I'd done half the research, but because of COVID, I couldn't go to some of the archives.
Right.
And so he had done the rest of the research for me.
Uh-huh.
And I sat there going, okay, like, was that actually my Christmas present from Clement Seymour? Like, why did I just get this now? And thank heavens I didn't just shut my computer down, because I would have got it Boxing Day. And it was so well done, and it nailed it. And right. So whenever I see somebody saying he owns slaves, I can get out there and say, you've got the wrong generation and the wrong year and the wrong person.
Oh, nice.
We have all the evidence to show he didn't.
Oh, that's fantastic. Right?
So yeah. Not that he has a statue anywhere that people can throw in the river. We don't have any statues of Clement Seymour. We don't.
Yeah.
So maybe we should get one.
Yeah, I would say so. Maybe we need to, you know, need to have a, yeah, that sounds good. I'm all for a Clement Seymour statue. I would be.
Me too.
I would be. Oh, you know, I guess that's one bad thing about the doing research on a topic like this. Any information that's going to come out before, it's going to be like on Christmas Eve. You know, it's not just going to be in a random day in May or anything.
Exactly. You know. But I really felt like somebody had given me a Christmas present. Yeah. I just went, wow.
Yeah.
Like, yay. So that was a good find. And then all the genealogy stuff, the fact that Clement Seymour's godfather was a spy, and he was the one who actually decoded the transmissions between Arnold, the British, and George Washington's army over his defection, right? That was really interesting.
Oh, wow.
You know, and then to find out that he's really Emily Dickinson. I mean, all that, like, you can tell, right? I like Stephen Jobs says, creativity is connectivity.
Right.
And I'm there. Right. Mm-hmm. I like connecting little things like that. I go, oh, okay. So, you know,
well,
that's what makes it fun. Right.
Well, it does make it fun. And when you connect people like that, because when people learn history, it seems like for me, it's all linear. It's like, okay, we're going to learn American history from, you know, 1801 to 1864. Okay. And then you're going to learn a little bit of European history from the same time frame. But you don't really realize that's going on at the same time until you make those connections between people, you
exactly.
know,
and
exactly, and, you know, because, you know, it, and even, you know, in our own lives, it's like, you know, because it's all so, you know, tangled together, and in the way we learn it, it's like, you know, we learn this, stop, learn something else, stop. And when you make those connections between the people, you just add those layers of people that knew people, and then you expand that world at the same time, and that's really makes it fascinating. So,
well, you probably saw that picture I have in the book of Saint Nicholas, and he's throwing an orange, or he's throwing gold balls through the window of the women who are going to be sold into slavery,
right?
Because the father doesn't have a dowry. Well, we put oranges or coins in the bottom of stockings. That's what that's from. That's why we do that, right? That's from the 3rd century. That's, you know, made it all the way down to Christmas Eve. You put that little orange in a kid's stocking. It's really that comes from St. Nicholas and the balls of gold.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Which symbolizes anonymous giving. And, you know, I love that kind of thing. Right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So you have 10 years behind you on this. What's next for you?
Well, I think I'm on this for a while because there's 2 bicentennials. So I'm 64. So I'll be 65 when I get through this campaign. Uh-huh. And then hopefully I can just maybe build my collection of TWAS and help other people build their collections of TWAS. I've connected with a lot of people now who have TWAS collections.
Uh-huh.
I met a woman the other day who's got 300. We're trying to figure out what we should do next year. Should we have a convention, or what are we going to do here?
Oh, wow.
You know, you've got people all over America with like 3 to 4 to 1,000 copies of TWAS sitting in their basements and in their bookshelves going, I collected it. Now what do I do with it?
Well, if you have a convention, don't forget me. Let me know. Okay. We'll make sure the word gets out. And, and if it's close enough, I'll be there, because that just sounds wildly fascinating.
Fun?
Yeah. Sounds wildly.
Something.
Yay. There's been conventions for a lot worse things. I'll tell you that. And,
true.
You know, so I'll be all in on that. But again, thank you so much for writing this book. And
you're very welcome. Yeah. Thanks for liking it.
Yeah. And everybody out there on YouTube, out in the podcast world, again, please go check it out on Amazon. There's a link in the show notes and description. It's called 'Twas the Night, The Art and History of the classic Christmas poem by Pamela McCall. And I appreciate you joining us here. Where can people reach you on social media?
I'm on Twitter and I'm on Facebook. You can find the cover of my book on Facebook or Twitter or my website.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. And
Amazon Prime Day is coming up on the 10th. So that's a great time to buy my book. Anything, it goes on sale.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That would be a good time to get it. Amazon Prime coming back up. And,
I think so.
Yeah. So you guys, be looking out for that, but I wouldn't wait to be honest with you guys. I would just go ahead and get it while you can. And,
because, that'd be a good idea.
Yeah. You just never know. Nowadays, you just never know when stuff will be easier to get than it won't be. But Pamela, thanks so much for joining us here on Christmas Clatter. Guys, if you're listening to the podcast, I really appreciate it. That's the bread and butter of Christmas Clatter. We started off as a podcast in 2019 and will always remain a podcast. But we are having so much fun on YouTube. Being live and hanging out with everybody. I just want to encourage you, if you can make the live episodes of Christmas Clatter on Wednesdays at 8:30 Central Standard Time, please do so. Because for those in the live chat now, even though we're closing out the podcast here, we'll get to have a little time here with Pamela to do a little Q&A and kind of talk and chat some more. And, so if you're able to make it, we'd love to have you, but I don't want to, you know, dismiss how much it means to us that you listen on the podcast as well. So thank you everybody for listening. And remember, as always, keep Christmas hope alive every day.